Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. We have another fantastic conversation for all of you listeners to enjoy as I am joined by a dear friend of Cracked Rackets and returning champion to this show. It's Baylor men's tennis head coach Michael Woodson joining us once again to break down his team's strong start to this 2024 season. Remember, this is a group that flirted with 500 for the majority of an injury-plagued 2023 campaign, a group that got knocked out in round one of the NCAA tournament for the first time in more than two decades. They have righted the ship to start 2024. 12-1 overall start to the Bears season. I wanted to ask Coach Woodson why he thinks the Bears have gotten off to such a strong start this year. What's changed for this roster that, again, has a bunch of returners amongst it? Of course, they also had an injection of talent. Devin Badenhorst, Louis Bowden, Oscar Polson, some real pieces to add to what was already a strong group returning to Waco. I wanted to pick Coach Woodson's brain. Why or how has it all managed to gel so quickly for the Bears here this season? We get into that and so much more. We also, of course, have the opportunity to preview his team's matchup against number one Ohio State, a matchup our Cracked Rackets team will be covering Wednesday, February 28th on ESPN+. That matchup starting 7 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you join us. It's going to be a fun one, folks. Again, fantastic tennis on the horizon. Baylor hosting number one Ohio State, 7 p.m. Eastern time, Wednesday, February 28th on ESPN+ to help preview that match. And again, discuss all things Baylor men's tennis. Let's get to it. My conversation with Baylor men's tennis head coach Michael Woodson. Joining us on the podcast once again today to help discuss his team's matchup against the number one team in the country, a match we will have for you tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+, is a man who is top five in appearances here on this Cracked Interviews podcast feed. Thus, I have to refer to him as a returning champion to this show. Of course, you also know him as the head coach of a team that reached the finals of both the NCAAs and National Indoors in 2021, and a team that this season is off to a 12-1 start to their year. Welcome back to the show, Baylor men's tennis head coach Michael Woodson. Coach, welcome back. It's been more than 3 months since we've had you on the show, so it was about time. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks for having me. I feel like that's not true, but yeah, we'll go back and look. I think it was probably like 2 months, but you know. Well, it feels too long. I'm glad it's good to be back.
That's what I'm saying. It feels too long was the message I'm trying to send. And yes, it's good to have you back. And look, let's just get right into it. I said I would drop this stat on you. Your team last season, obviously, you know, was different than in your previous 2 years on the job. 17-16 overall. You guys get eliminated in the first round of the NCAA tournament. You know, that had not only happened never to you during your tenure at Baylor, hadn't happened for the program since 2001, you know, when the team finished 12-12 and lost in the NCAA first round. That's more than two decades ago. You know, I was 5 years old when the time of that season, you were probably 6 or 7 years old. And by the way, a happy belated birthday to you. Talk to me about 12-1, just the atmosphere, the vibes, what that sort of start does for the belief in this group.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing up last year. You know, it always feels good to reflect on tough times and great times. And, you know, we do refer back to last year a lot, not just for the struggles that we had, but the lessons learned and kind of to show the growth that we've had from a lot of our young guys from last year to this year. And you know, the what this team is doing now, I think in a lot of regards has to do with everything that happened last year and their commitment to making necessary change. You know, I think we had begun to take the success for granted. You know, some of those guys and the guys come in thinking it's just going to come easy because we're Baylor and we're a top five team every year. And you know, we know, you know, as well as anybody that there's probably 40 teams out there these days that could be a top 10 program, and the margins are so small and every team is so good that, you know, it really takes, you know, it takes a ton of commitment and discipline and maturity and consistency to be able to reach those levels. And we were fortunate to be able to do that for a few years, and it sounds like 20 years. You know, it's exciting to be back into that type of mode. I mean, of course, we've been very fortunate to have a couple of a freshman, a transfer, a couple of guys that had to sit out last year. You know, all of those additions to the team have made a huge impact. But I think the growth and development of the returners that played a big role in last year's team is probably the biggest difference and has us feeling pretty good about ourselves. But you know, we know we have to get a lot better if we're going to do what we would like to do, which is compete for championships at the end of the season.
And I want to ask about your roster, the returners, the improvement you've seen already. But just to contrast the two starts, because last season, obviously, you guys were fortunate enough to host a kickoff weekend and your team actually advances to the national indoors. This year, obviously, you have to go on the road. Unfortunately, the first matchup with Arizona gets canceled, but obviously a really, you know, again, if Luke makes that overhead in the third set, I'm really bringing, we're playing the hits here early. Don't yell at me. I might get you to swear for the first time. That might be the accomplishment here today. But the point is, if Luke makes that overhead, the match might still be going deep in a third set breaker somewhere. And I'm just curious because how you've seen the groups respond to those two results. Last year, they make it. And obviously, it felt like that was the highlight of the season versus this year. You know, you lose that tight match. You haven't lost since. How do those two starts contrast?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, we very much went in different directions. I think last year was tough given that we got bit by the injury bug. Sure. Right after we advanced to national indoors. And then we played, I think, 8 straight top 13, 12 matches with a lineup that wasn't quite ready for that. And then it started to really break down our confidence. No matter what we did, it just felt like it was harder and harder and harder. And this year, you know, we really weren't sure where we were. You know, I think it's been interesting to watch our guys every match because there was a lot of, you know, not anxiety going into the matches, not really sure where do we stack up because some of these guys haven't experienced the success. You know, if you look at our roster, you'd say, oh, that's a pretty good team. But, you know, what have they accomplished really? Not much. And so, you know, the guys looked unsure of themselves going into matches, and then they started to have some success. I mean, I really felt like the Arizona State win was a huge win for us, you know, to be able to take that team down 4-3 after losing the doubles point in Tempe, especially with how strong their top three is. And that win has aged very well, especially the wins that Z and Devin had at 2 and 3. And then, you know, to lose to Arizona was tough, but I think we all thought, gosh, we kind of left that one on the table, you know, and this team is 5 years older than us at almost every spot. And, you know, so we know we need to get better, but we're right there. We're hungry now. We're hungrier. And every match since then, we've looked like we're gaining confidence. And starting to walk around like it. And I think they really understand as a team that we can do special things, not just in the future, but right now. And that has been a welcome sight as a coach to really see and experience.
Yeah. You talk about that Arizona State match and dropping the doubles point there. Pretty sure that's the only doubles point your team has dropped so far this season.
We lost it to Arizona too.
Maybe, I was going to say maybe the Arizona one as well, but outside of that, 26-6 in individual sets. And look, I mean, again, there are wins over SMU and Nebraska, and you mentioned the Arizona State win. You know, again, all these wins already. I'm curious, given you're working in some new pieces, given it's still a young team, you know, Luke is still a sophomore, Jambor is still a sophomore. What do you attribute that double success to early?
Good question. You know, we felt like we have a ton of really good pieces and doubles, you know, in the fall, and we didn't have that much success in doubles, to be honest, in the fall, as much as we would have liked. And so we've been pretty intentional about putting a lot of time into figuring out who the right pieces are and who goes with who, and also just improving the skill set of each individual guy. And I have to give a ton of credit to the guys. They've worked really hard on it, and having the depth of doubles player that we have now, not just the six guys that are playing right now, but the other six guys, I think makes the quality of our training way better. They're challenged. Every time we go out there, we can mix it up and it doesn't get monotonous as far as matchups go. And that seems to benefit everybody. And, you know, our guys are playing with a ton of discipline out there. They're making good decisions. I wouldn't say we have played well every time, but we have stayed in matches because we've been able to hold serve consistently at almost every spot. That has given us an opportunity to sneak something here or there, even when we don't feel our best. And that's on our guys being willing and able to make good decisions under pressure.
Yeah, it feels like Teddy and Z probably a lock as a pairing. Are you still going to play around with everything else? Do you feel like you have some good continuity in the pairings you have right now? Obviously, you know, I got the chance to call the SMU match and to see Chris Frantz in the fifth year with Oscar Polson. It's a lot of size. It's a lot of power at a three spot. Obviously, you've got other options. You've got a 6'7" serve, so that's probably going in somewhere. You still playing around with the pieces early, or are you feeling like you're starting to find some teams gelling?
You know, it would be hard for me to argue against the guys that are playing right now and just the chemistry that is there. But I really like what I'm seeing from several of the other guys. And so, you know, it's a very long season. And fortunately, even though we've already played 13 matches, I think we have like, I don't know, 25 more or something crazy. You know, so I'm excited to see what these guys can do. And we're always evaluating, you know, how can we do it better? How can we coach better? How can they play better? You know, are there good options? Like, certainly believing in the guys that we've got, but continuing to push forward and find ways to improve. And we're going to get a lot of information here over the next, you know, 3 days, playing Ohio State and Illinois. And I think, you know, that will give us some more feedback on how we can improve.
I want to ask you about those matches. Quick tangent here, though. You mentioned the 25 more matches. Obviously, you're not shy about scheduling doubleheaders. And I know this is something we may have talked about a little bit in the past. Obviously, you've got a bigger roster. But like, I look at a day like Sunday, that day at Baylor where, you know, Grand Canyon ends up pushing the women. That goes 4-3. Then you guys play SMU. That's a 3-hour plus match that goes 4-2. Then you've got Grand Canyon after that as well. Is that the intention? Like, is that the part of the goal as well? I'm just curious why so many doubleheaders on the schedule.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, we have to do right by our players, you know, and we have 12 guys right now. And I think 12 guys that can play at a very high level that are either new or have extensive experience playing for us. And we need to get those guys reps because you never know. I mean, maybe tomorrow night we need to go, you know, three spots deeper, you know, than we would have normally, or maybe it's on Friday or something comes next week. And, you know, for us, we recruit on development and we work really hard with our guys every day to help them improve on and off the court. But it's really hard to improve without consistent competition. And, you know, we need to give those guys live reps. And the only way to do that sometimes with our numbers is to have two matches in one day and make sure to allocate opportunity for our guys. And so it's not a perfect system. And sometimes we have guys cheering maybe a little longer on the front end or the back end than we would like. But, you know, I think it's really valuable and necessary for all of our guys in the locker room. And I hope they appreciate it. They certainly do a great job with it.
How helpful is it being in Texas? I mean, again, Abilene Christian, or Abilene, I think, I always screw it up, is on the schedule every year. Grand Canyon's on the schedule every year. Like, do you know the schools you're always going to turn to for those doubleheaders?
we try to mix it up a little bit. Maybe not as, you know, we aren't as consistent probably as like a Texas A&M, sure. You know, with how they do it. I'm usually pretty open to coaches that reach out and say, hey, we're coming down here for spring break. We've got that with Cleveland State this year, for example, Omaha. Next year, Lehigh is coming down. It's, we always catch a couple of teams like that that say, hey, coach, can we use your facility to train? Would love to play you guys. Maybe you can set up a couple extra matches. Like, man, I was at Valpo. Like, if I had somebody that would have done that for us, it would have been amazing. So, you know, I just love the opportunity to bring teams down. And I think it's really good for us to have that different competition and experience, as well as, you know, to give a great experience to those other teams, because you, like you say, we're fortunate enough to be in the middle of Texas, great weather, great facilities, happy to host. And so we try to mix it up a little bit, but then you've got, I mean, just rock solid programs like Abilene Christian or Lamar that are just so well coached, and love those coaches, the way their players compete. They play fair and hard and push us every time. And so I have all day and all the time to be able to play those teams. And gosh, we even went to Abilene, which was one of the best trips I've ever been on. So a lot of fun. And yeah, so it's not a perfect system. It changes every year, but we try to give our guys lots of opportunity to compete.
I'm bringing the Abilene coaches onto the show for the selection show, because they'll know who the best are. They see all of you in the state of Texas and all of it. And so, yeah, their perspective is actually maybe the most valued, should be the most valued in the sport. I'll put you on the spot now, because, again, looking at your roster, obviously 12-1, there's been a lot of success everywhere. You have four returners, more than four. It's hard to say just four, because there's been so many shifts in and out of the lineup, you trying to get opportunities for everyone. Who's the most improved from last season to this season? The player that you've just seen the biggest jump from, that perhaps you can attribute why this team has taken a step forward here to start this year?
I can't believe you're doing that to me. And you know that these listen to this. I'm going to start out by doing the cliche coach thing and say, I really am impressed with how much all of our guys have improved and the direction that they're all going. I think if you just objectively look at it, it would be really hard to say anybody has improved more than Luke. You know, and just if you look at his, not just his record, but also the way he's playing and his ability to focus for long periods of time at a high level and use all of his tools. And I mean, the score lines really speak for themselves. You know, it is incredibly valuable in college to win fast. And he has been able to do that a few times this season in crucial moments. And I think that has made a big difference for us. And in even feedback, like you said, the match against Arizona that didn't go his way, I feel like he used that in the right way. And we're just seeing tons of growth. You know, I am really pleased with what the other guys are doing too. But I think you go from being, you know, pretty competitive at six to, you know, playing, you know, 5-4 middle of the lineup and winning consistently. You know, you've got to get the nod there.
Yeah, it was fascinating, because his matchup against SMU, when he was down love 40, that's when the serve and volley came out. And that's when all of a sudden he had all this success. And it was just so funny to see him find that gear. And yeah, I think that's a great choice. Again, I think anyone would have been a fair choice. I appreciate you sticking to one and keeping the integrity of the question. You know, I think the one fans might turn to more obviously would be sophomore Jean Borvelt, who goes from, you know, bottom half of the lineup to start last season to now he's pretty consistent in the top half, 6-1, playing the 1-2 spots to start this year, and, you know, is certainly molding into a top 50 player in the country. It just speaks to more broadly, you talk about being a development program. And so often with sophomores, it goes one of two ways. They sink or swim. Like, college tennis is either really for you, or sometimes you learn it's kind of not and you're ready to pursue other interests. I mean, again, it's an opportunity to talk about your school, which I want to give you the chance to do. Why do you think this group of sophomores in particular seem to be finding their stride here in year two?
I think it takes time to get really acclimated to what it looks like to play college tennis. I mean, it's extreme to say, but it's almost a different sport than professional tennis or junior tennis. And, you know, you're playing every day at a high level against really good players in practice, or you go into the matches and doesn't matter if you're playing Abilene Christian or Southern Cal. I mean, these guys are pretty good and they're fighting really hard every single point. And, you know, that's something that you have to learn. That's not something that they experience necessarily on the pro tour or in the junior circuit every single match in, match out. And you're playing for something bigger than yourself, and people are counting on you more than just you. If you don't feel good, it doesn't matter. You have to still find a way to produce for the team. You know, all these guys in this program, the university, we're investing so much into these guys that comes with a pressure too, that, you know, takes time to really understand and appreciate and come to grips with. And, you know, I like to say we do a good job because we're patient with the development of those guys, you know, and we try to establish a great relationship with them first and build trust between the staff and the players and in each individual. And not to, again, be cliche, but, you know, making sure they know we care before we really try to tell them, you know, how much we know about what we're doing and how much we can really help them, you know, as tennis players. And so, yeah, I mean, it's I'd like to say we have something to do with it, but I also just think, you know, we have great leadership, you know, at the top, and our older guys are doing a great job of working with the young guys, holding them accountable. They have a huge responsibility that they feel to make Baylor great, you know, and they've seen all these great programs, and we've got alums that come back all the time. Charlie Broom's right here, you know, now right outside this door. And, you know, they saw what he did or what Jimmy Bendek did or Nick Sekoviak, and they want to be like those guys. They want to honor those guys. And so it just gives them that little bit of a boost to keep working every day and to, you know, to play with great pride as a university. So I think those guys are just, you know, hitting their stride. They're working hard every day. And I mean, you talk about, you know, Jambor, you talk about Luke. I mean, Martin and Armand are doing an amazing job too. And, you know, with they're kind of freshmen because they didn't get to play last year. But they've been around the block for a year, over a year now. And, you know, they're starting to experience that same thing, and I think are making a huge impact on this team.
Yeah. Talk to me about your freshmen this year. Obviously, Devin, Louis, both having success right away. And, you know, Devin, I know, takes his first loss against SMU on Sunday, but him winning that second set, it was a moment. It just kind of allowed your team to breathe, right? Because, you know, Zach and Liam were having success for SMU at 1-3, and it felt like had they taken both of those matches in straights, now all of a sudden it's anyone's ball game. But Devin able to extend things. What have you seen from him that has allowed him to have success so quickly?
Gosh, I mean, he is, he's a special talent, no doubt about it. I mean, he's built unbelievably well for the game. He moves, you know, he's 6'7", but he moves like he's 6'2". You know, he's great feel, but his mind is very strong. I mean, and not just that he carries himself with great confidence and believes, but he's also extremely coachable. You only have to tell him something once and he will do it. And he trusts, that takes sometimes years, to build, with guys, and we trust him and he trusts us. And I think it's allowed him to excel much faster than your average January freshman. You know, I would put him up against any freshman in the country right now, especially January enrollees. I mean, what he's doing is amazing. And we've already had this conversation, so I don't mind saying it. And then him hearing it is he needed to lose on Sunday. And, you know, as a coach, sometimes you need those losses for true development, for real learning to happen. And I think he got to a point where it was just, it's one thing to believe and feel great and every time, but you also can't take the process for granted. And over the last couple of weeks, I think it started for him. He started to get a little bit distracted. Wasn't as zoned in practices as he needed to be. It wasn't bad, but you know, he just wasn't quite ready for a guy like Liam. You know, maybe just thought it was going to come a little bit easier. And we all know what a great player Liam and how he play. And so, you know, really, excited to see him lock back in because what he's accomplishing at his age, I mean, this fast, it's unheard of, I would say.
Yeah. And again, we'll talk about Louis in a second. I'm curious, you talk about the talent, the size, all the things he can do, because there is feel there. look, you've got one of those in your coaching on your coaching staff already in Isak, and obviously fascinating and fantastic player himself in his own day. Probably can still swing the racket pretty darn successfully. What are you guys locking in on with Devin as the next piece in his tennis game? What is the thing that unlocks, to your point, all that talent, all that potential, you know, that allows him to have success as he continues through his career?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. You know, it's as he gets stronger and continues to develop, having a little bit more load on his serve. And we like to talk about being a good pitcher. You know, indoors you can get away with just cranking the serve and hitting a bunch of aces, but outside, maybe that, you know, playing linear one pace doesn't work as well. You have to use your slice, your kick serves, you know, mix things up a little bit more. And then, you know, just he has a really good transition game, but figuring out when to move up and back, you know, more efficiently, as well as spreading the court, are things that we're focused on with him. And, you know, and then a lot of it has to do with having the discipline on and off the court to manage the body so that he can, and the mind, so he can go out and have a clear, focused practice every single day. And that, you know, is something we push him on, but we're also patient with him given that he's still getting used to the college environment and having to balance academics, which he's doing a great job, you know, and know that it takes time, that we're in it here for the long haul.
That was the most fascinating part, is you could see him still trying to put all those pieces together. That, yeah, of course, there are free points on the serve. There are times he hits the kick on the outside, and you're like, yeah, that's going to work against anyone. Doesn't really matter what surface you're on. But no, you're absolutely right. Like, it is going to be fascinating to see him continue to put those pieces together. And obviously, again, I know that's something you guys will be focused on. On the other side, I watched Louis play. I mean, that's a six singles. If you've ever seen a six singles player, just again, the fight, the scrap, the flicks of the forehand. I mean, him versus Hadigian was particularly fun because he was 12 feet behind the baseline while Hadigian was just slugging away on forehand. And it's like, ah, it's just good to be back in the season with a match like that. By the way, they almost delivered you know, Cole on the birthday. Thankfully, the guys pulled through there. Otherwise, you know, again, what was I going to do on my broadcast? But talk to me about Louis, what you've seen from him at that sixth spot.
No, I've been very impressed with him. You know, it's just a totally different type of tennis than he's used to playing. You know, being indoors a lot at home in England, guys play fast up on the baseline. You know, I for some reason people are telling their players to play slow and high to him. You know, and so he's getting just a great lesson every single match on how do you deal with that, and stepping up and being able to, you know, create your own pace and move forward. And the coolest part is that he's adapting every single match. He's getting more and more comfortable in those situations. And, you know, the other day was the first time. I mean, he was right there at the end against Arizona, but I don't think he really knew it because we were in the corner. This time against SMU, he knew that was it. It was him and Oscar, and he needed to deliver. And that's hard for a freshman. And so every time he comes out, I see him get better, and I see him handle, you know, pressure better. And he feels more confident in himself and his game. And, you know, he likes to play high level players, and he loves to battle. And I think for him, it's just a continuing to trust himself to attack and finish. And, you know, he's gaining more and more confidence in that every match. So I've been really pleased with him. I think he, you know, he wants to do it at the highest level. And, you know, sometimes he doesn't have enough patience with himself, I would say, but he's just a heck of a competitor and makes us all better every day when we compete.
Very quick. Very quick as well. Yeah, again, was just you're absolutely right. The word competitor is exactly the one to describe his game. And I'm curious because, you know, we've talked about a bunch of different pieces, but you've got a lot of depth on your team this season. And I'm curious, as you look at your lineup, what are your biggest questions right now looking at it? What are the things that keep you up at night? Is it, you know, again, I guess the framing would be there's really the two questions is, who should be number one right now? Because there is some parity up at the top as well. On the same side, who should be five? Who should be six? You got a lot of options right now in your lineup. I'm curious which one keeps you up more.
Yeah, that's a great question. Gosh, I mean, I think the thing that I tend to worry about a lot is just, are our guys getting better every day? You know, are we serving each of our 12 guys at the level that we need to, that we promise them? You know, because there's a responsibility from them when they come here and sign on to be a part of our program, but there's also a responsibility from us. And, you know, the hardest part about, you know, being in my role is every time I list the lineup, half the guys are mad at me, you know, and it is what it is. And it's a responsibility that I have chosen to take on, but also get it from their perspective as, you know, coach, I want to be a pro coach. I need to play, you know, and trying to make sure that I'm honest with them about what they need to do to be able to have those opportunities, but also keep them ready. Because, you know, on any given night, we're going to need all of these guys. And so, you know, we need to keep them, advancing and developing, getting better every single day. And, you know, so I think that I tend to look through the lineup and you know, from 1 to 12 and really think about them all and try not to, you know, as much as I can. I probably think less about the top than I do about the bottom. And I wouldn't even say 6, 7. It's more like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and make sure those guys are getting what they need, you know, and let Izak and Gray worry about the other guys.
Fair enough. No, I appreciate the honest answer. You've been around some really good teams, obviously, national championship caliber team in your first season on the job as head coach. What's the thing this team needs to do or continue to do to get to that level?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll give you a brutally honest answer that I've been thinking about this. I think the thing that makes this team really special is that we're strong at all 9 positions. You can't point at any spot in our lineup and say that is a weak spot. And that is really something we didn't have last year. And something that is a mark of a team that you have to have that if you're a top 10 team. It's, you know, it is mandatory, which I think we're capable of that. I know we're moving in that direction. I think we're going to figure out what we're really made of here over the next month when I think we play the number one team like 4 times or something, the top 3 teams 4 times. But the thing that I have yet to see that I saw, you know, 2 years ago and 3 years ago when we were, you know, top 3, top 2, was we had spots that were locks. We probably had 3 spots on both teams where we knew 9 out of 10 times those guys are going to win in straight sets. And it wasn't always the same positions, you know, over those few years. But to me, that's a mark of a great team. And my guess is you can look at a couple of teams this year right now that you would say, though they have 2 or 3 positions where, you know, you can count on those points 9 out of 10 times unless something weird happens. And I think that that's what we're searching for right now is where are those guys? And, you know, are they going to show themselves? I think if you watch what Luke's been doing over the last few weeks, it might be him, you know, and which other spots are going to turn into locks. And those give the team a ton of confidence where you can truly look to your right, look to your left and say, hey, I can just go out and battle because they've got me.
Yeah. Now, it'll be fascinating to see it develop amongst this team over the course of this season. And, you know, I'm curious, you brought up 2 or 3 teams that you're alluding to that might have those locks right away. I'm curious, we're now 2 months in, dare I say, a third through the season, not the specific teams in general, but more broadly, the outlook at this 2024 landscape. Man, much like we anticipated in the preseason, feels like there's a lot of parity 4, 5 through 30, 35 in the rankings right now. I'm curious if you feel that way and what your observations have been through the first third.
Totally agree. I mean, I felt like there were probably 4 teams that were the best 4 going into the year. The combination of talent and experience, you know, separate them slightly, not that they can't be beaten, but that they're slightly ahead of the rest. And I felt like, man, we could be 5, you know, or we could be 25, you know, depending on how mature and experienced we are, you know, and because there are so many other great teams like that. And we've seen probably that number go all the way down to 40. We played Nebraska and they're so well coached and they compete so hard and they're good at every spot too. We saw the same thing out of a team like Tulsa or SMU. I mean, 60 in the country is absolutely not the case for that team. and you're seeing their results with other teams like, man, on any given day, anybody can beat anybody. Especially with just the depth of college tennis. And so, I think it's even deeper than we talked about at the beginning of the year. And, we've had that experience. When we played Arizona, I felt like we were right there and we had just as hard of a time to beat SMU, just as hard of a time to beat, a Tulsa or Nebraska here at home. And so, I think anybody can finish anywhere at this point. And I'm excited to measure ourselves against teams like Ohio State, Illinois, Wake Forest, TCU here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and coming up obviously tomorrow or Wednesday, February 28th, depending on, I suppose, when listeners are hearing this, it'll be out here on Tuesday. You guys host the top team in the country, Ohio State. It's been a little bit since Baylor's hosted a top team in the country, but obviously you've had success doing so in the past as a program. What are your thoughts on this matchup? What's it going to take from your guys to get over this hump and knock off the Buckeyes?
Well, first of all, we're really excited. I think it's great to be able to play them and measure ourselves against the national indoor champions. To get them probably after that, maybe a slight lull would be nice if Ty would have it for us, would be great too. But, we need that feedback as a team. I think we're ready. We've challenged ourselves against some of the best teams in the country, but not the best team, which I think we can all agree at this current moment they are. And to be able to put on this kind of a show for our fans is truly exciting. Really looking forward to it. I think it's going to take our best tennis and we're going to have a great day. But I know that our talent level is there to be able to compete with them. I know our confidence is there. And then, to be able to play at home in front of the crowds that we get is never easy to play against if you're a road team. So we're certainly excited for the opportunity.
No, I know a team, again, multiple teams have players who have told me that their experience down in Waco playing against those fans, some of their favorite experiences as they look back on their college careers. And look, again, I mentioned it's been a while since you guys have hosted a number one team in the country. Also coming around on the horizon for the first time since 2015, you guys will host NCAA's individual, obviously coming up in November. Then you've got the team event next May. I don't think we've spoken since the announcement, at least on the podcast, that ESPN and their platforms will be covering NCAA events. And I'm curious, what that means to you, knowing you guys will be hosting that event and what that component adds, obviously, in terms of shining a spotlight on the sport. I'm curious what it adds logistically. Is there another wrinkle you guys, I'm sure there are some steps you got to go through.
For sure. I mean, we have lots that we would like to do and are planning to do here to the facilities to prepare for NCAAs. I mean, we have to put our cameras on the back. We have to fix the lighting. We have to do some landscaping, get the courts resurfaced and ready to go, put a fresh coat of paint on some things. We're going to do some renovations inside the herd, and so we're doing a lot of stuff. I think it's stressful, as a coach, especially doing something first. I feel a real responsibility to deliver a great fall individual championship because I think how it goes here is going to set the tone of, really what's it going to be like in the future. And so we really want to do a great job with that. It's also a great opportunity to showcase who we are here at Baylor, not just as a tennis program, but as an athletic department and a university, to show off truly how special Waco is. I know in the past it's gotten a bad rap, but it's grown so much. It's a beautiful place. We couldn't be happier to be here and have the opportunity to live and work in this type of environment. And I want to give that experience to everybody that visits us here over the next year, because we're going to have a lot of people making a lot of stops here. So certainly excited about it, but feel the responsibility and the stress for sure, but mostly just excited.
Well, on that note, then, one final thing for you before I let you go. And again, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+, Baylor takes on Ohio State. At that NCAA individual tournament, we will have a lot of the best players in the country, all in one location, all, dare I say, trapped together in that location, not in the sense of trapped in Waco, in the sense of they don't have other events. This is the event they're focused on all week long. my pitch for you, because I can fortunately say I will be down there for the event. Can we do a player combine? Like maybe the Saturday, Sunday before? And this is where you're wearing two hats, right? You're an organizer. That sounds fun, but you're also a coach. And I know there's going to be some pushback from coaches on, I don't want my players to potentially hurt themselves before a tournament. Here's my pitch, though. You know, again, it's like, we got to do some sort of three-cone sprint or something related to that on the court. Definitely, we're hitting targets on serve. We're definitely hitting targets with forehand, backhand. I think we should do a thing between teammates. What two teammates can do 50 or 100 balls consecutively down the center of the court in the quickest amount of time? Because, again, that's speed, that's accuracy, that's, you know, again, precision, all these different things. I also think we should do a coaching combine. Not that I want to see you guys moving, because that's going to hurt everyone and our feelings. But some of you guys can put the ball on a dime, feeding-wise. And I just want to see you all flex your muscles. Like, you know, again, who's feeding the ball here? Who's hitting this target first? There are some coaching-related combine things we can do. All I'm saying is, can I put it on your horizon for individuals?
I mean, I feel like it would be weird to say no at this point. You sold hard, so... yeah, I mean, we can look at it. I think you're going to get a lot of pushback on probably both, you know, putting the players out there and also the coaches having to perform under pressure, you know, needs and different things, the quirks that we all have probably feels tough. But I mean, I think doing something where we have a player zone and find different exciting ways to build, you know, build the brand of college tennis and tell the story of these amazing student athletes, I'm all for it. So let's get together and brainstorm and get ready for November.
I like it. If I can't convince a coach 50 ball center is not going to harm your player, they're like, no, it's too fast. I'm like, no, it's 50 ball center. Like, you should hope they can do this drill quickly, given the event they're about to play in. And so, again, I would be surprised. Well, with all that said, again, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Baylor versus Ohio State. It's always special when these two programs share a court. It is always, of course, special when we have you on the podcast joining us. So, head coach Michael Woodson, appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. Appreciate you allowing us to shine a spotlight on that matchup as well. Looking forward to watching the Bears compete.
We're excited to have you guys calling it. Thanks. Thanks for everything you do for college tennis.
Hope all of you enjoyed my conversation with Baylor men's tennis head coach Michael Woodson. Obviously, very much looking forward to calling his team's battle against number one Ohio State. You can watch that matchup on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+. Again, Wednesday, February 28th, 7 p.m. Eastern time, Baylor hosting number one Ohio State on ESPN+. Look, the Buckeyes are a juggernaut. They're undefeated. They're national indoor champions. They've struggled in doubles to start this season. At one point, they had lost four of five doubles points, or four doubles points in a five-match streak. You go down 1-0 on the road, life can be tough for any team, even a juggernaut like the Buckeyes. And look, as we discussed with Coach Woodson, Baylor's got real depth. Obviously, Ohio State's got real depth. They've got the best depth. They were all tournament team at the national indoors at the 3-6 positions because they were undefeated. Tracy at 3, Anthrop at 4, Cash at 5, Bernard at 6. Outdoors, the configuration of those four might look a little bit different. They're still all going to be expected to be equally successful as they were indoors as well. Cannon Kingsley, Justin Boulay are trusted top 25 players in the college tennis ranks. You know, Baylor and Coach Woodson talked about the depth. The Buckeyes are number one for a reason. They have that depth on steroids, exclamation point. I don't mean literally, obviously. I mean in the figurative sense, this team, it's supernatural. Again, how talented they are and the success they have already had, a testament to that fact. Baylor's really talented as well. Again, whomever it is at 1 and 2, Perelec, Veltz, in whatever order, they're going to give Kingsley and Boulay a run. If it's Perelec versus Kingsley, Boulay versus Veltz, I actually think you like those matchups better, Baylor. Lefty versus lefty, both big hitters, two guys who can find just about every angle and often play to the level of their opponents in both the best sense possible and sometimes not the best sense in Kingsley and Teddy Perelec. Those are really fun matchups. Badenhorst at 3, the 6'7" big server. If he's playing Tracy, I mean, welcome to college tennis when you face a competitor like Tracy, Devin Badenhorst, but that's really fun. The grinding nature, again, the contrast, Koenig versus Cash at five, Bernie if it's Bowden at six, and then, again, not to Oscar Poulsen with how well he rushes you. He can make anyone uncomfortable. If he's facing Anthrop, obviously Anthrop, his power will just take away that net from you, but Baylor's really good. This is a talented team. They can push the Buckeyes everywhere. You don't hate any individual matchup, no matter what the Buckeyes lineup shakes out to be, unless it is, you know, Cash versus Bowden at six. That's a tough matchup for the freshman. That one, maybe you lean heavy Cash. You probably always lean heavy Alex Bernard if he's playing lower than three in your lineup outdoors, but that's because they're number one in the country for a reason. I sincerely think if you're a Baylor Bear fan listening to the end of this podcast, make sure you are there in Waco because the Bears have the talent at home. Buckeyes haven't played nearly as much outdoor tennis as a team from Texas will have to this point of the season. It's going to be a fun match. And you get to see the number one team in the country. And just as a tennis fan, it's a pleasure always to watch the Buckeyes compete in person. So if you're in the area, make sure you go check it out. If you're not in the area but you'd like to tune in, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, February 28th on ESPN+, Baylor hosting number one Ohio State. With that said, a shout-out as always to our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout-out as well to all of you fans who tune in day in, day out, make it possible for us to have opportunities like broadcasting Wednesday's match. With all of that said, for our fantastic guest, Baylor men's tennis head coach Michael Woodson, our super producer Daniel Westhoff, and all of us here at both Crack Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You've been listening to another edition of the Cracked Interviews Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy. Talk to you all soon. Thanks, everyone.